Good afternoon, and welcome to the Harbor Group quarterly conference call. My name is Peter Coward. I'm one of the three partners of the Harbor Group. First of all, I'd like to thank you for joining us this afternoon. The weather here in Toronto has been relatively dull and gray, but that is not a reflection of what the markets have done in the first year to date in the first quarter. Today, we are joined by Robin Gollison, our lead strategist. By now, Robin is no longer a stranger to us. He's close to celebrating his third year with the Harbor Group. He will cover off our view on interest rates, currency, and the outlook for the equity markets. So with no further ado, Robin?
Great. Thank you very much, Peter. And thank you very much, everybody, for taking time out of your busy day and dialing into our call this afternoon. I typically like to start these calls by taking a short look back at you know, what the recent past has looked like, what expectations were. And if you look at how things were at the turn of this year, you think back to December, you had a strong equity market rally. You had the bond market selling off pretty significantly. You had 10-year interest rates in the U.S. at 3%, Canada a little bit lower. And the overwhelming expectation going into this year from a lot of market strategists was that you're going to see more of the same. So the equity gains last year were driven mostly by multiple expansion or investors having increased confidence, willing to pay more for a dollar of earnings. And people thought that that was going to continue this year. We had a little more, I'd say, cautious outlook. We thought it was going to be a good year, but it'd be more volatile than last year, and we thought you're probably going to get growth closer to the growth in earnings, and any kind of boost you get from increased multiples would be a bonus. And that's kind of what we've seen so far, especially in the U.S. The U.S. market is a little more than flat year to date. It's been a fairly volatile ride. You had about a 6% correction in January. In Canada, it was a little shallower, around 4%. And as a pleasant surprise, as Peter alluded to, the Canadian market has really outperformed this year, which has been great after a few years of definitely challenging markets for the broader Canadian market. So the year-to-date 2014, probably not exactly playing out within a lot of people's expectations. You have 10-year interest rates that are down by about 30 basis points. Again, equities globally are flat. Canada has been an outperformer. And really the main culprit that most people are pointing to is, of course, this wonderful weather we've had so far this year. If anybody had the pleasure of spending the winter in Toronto, it was a real doozy, and it kind of continues today, as Peter said. So I guess the big question is, how plausible is it that weather had that much of an effect, and what's the outlook like going forward? And our take on it is, the weather probably did have an effect, even though it seems like a fairly convenient excuse. You have to think, you know, here we're pretty used to harsh weather, and the Canadian economy is ready to deal with it, but you put 3 inches of snow in a city like Atlanta for a couple of days, they don't have any snow plows, they don't have any salt, but things definitely happen. So I think it's fair to say that a large part of the U.S. economy was probably affected by the weather. Canada probably less so, but then again, we're also highly correlated with the U.S. economy. And we've seen that in the first quarter gross domestic product data in the U.S., which came up today. First quarter growth in the U.S. came in at only 0.1%. Economists were looking for a little over 1% growth, so that was a big miss. I have to remember that that's, of course, in the past, and we have to keep on looking forward here. And we saw some interesting data from Merrill Lynch. They looked at the last 40 years, the five harshest winters, and what was the first quarter growth like, what was the second quarter growth like. And it's pretty interesting. On average, of those five, your average first quarter growth in the really harsh winters was 1%, and the average second quarter growth was 6%. So there's some pretty big numbers in there back when you had a faster growing economy in the 60s and 70s. But you also had two harsh winters in 2010 and 2011 that were part of that data set. And even in the recent past, again, in the harsh winters, you had growth close to zero in the first quarter on average in those 2 years, and it bounced back to 3.5%. So we think there's a pretty good likelihood that growth does bounce back in the second quarter and throughout the year. That's what we're seeing from the economics community. You know, at the beginning of the year, the economists thought the first quarter growth in the U.S. would be 2.6%. Again, it came in just around flat. That's worth remembering, that's the first look at first quarter GDP, and they often revise it two more times, so it could move a lot in either direction from here. But as the year goes on, you've got 3% growth penciled in for the latter part of the year, or around a 2.7% U.S. growth for the full year, which would be a pretty good outcome after such a soft start to the year. And since the weather's begun to improve, you know, even though, again, it hasn't really done so here, it's better than it was, I guess, a month ago, we've definitely seen the data start to improve. If you look at things like the retail sales reports, non-farm payrolls, initial unemployment claims, which are the amount of people losing their jobs, basically those are at you know, near the lows of the cycle. The data has definitely perked back up with the weather. And if you look at the earnings reports from companies, you had first quarter earnings growth expectations of close to zero. That's coming in closer to 5%. Now, again, those expectations were definitely talked down. That's kind of the game that the companies have with the street, right? Companies will start the quarter saying, oh, we think things are going to be great. Then as the quarter goes on, they kind of announce, they say, oh, things aren't so good. It might not be that good. So the analysts take down their numbers or their expectations, and lo and behold, the companies beat these lowered expectations. It's proved fairly effective for management teams and their stock prices, and that's it's almost expected now, I guess, that you're going to have companies beating expectations on average. But the point is, this quarter, once again, you're getting a fairly similar beat rate, if you will, as you've seen for the last few years. So if you look at growth on more of a global scale, one of the interesting things happening right now is that for the first time since around 2010, since the Eurozone crisis, I guess, you're actually seeing synchronized global growth. So you're seeing the U.S. growing, you're seeing Europe finally growing, coming out of recession, and even Japan is starting to grow again. With some success from the Abenomics experiment they're doing over there. And that's really good for Canada because, as we know, a lot of Canada's economy is commodities, and commodity prices have had a pretty good run this year, and we think that reflects some of the strength we've seen in global growth. The funny thing is, as much as our stock market's really leveraged to commodities, if you look at our economy as a whole, really the U.S. economy is the biggest determinant. We joke that if, you know, you put U.S. GDP growth and Canadian GDP growth, two lines without labels, very few people will be able to tell the difference over the long term. And, you know, if you had to forecast Canadian GDP growth, if you had one input you could ask for, it would be the U.S. GDP growth, because that's the biggest determinator. So we continue to think Canada's going to perform pretty much in line with the U.S., and with the depreciated currency, it definitely helps things and makes our exports more competitive. And it also helps us as investors because a lot of Canadian companies that sell U.S. dollar-denominated products like energy companies, they obviously get a natural lift to their earnings unless, of course, they've hedged away all the currency. So we've seen some better data start to take place as the weather has improved here. But interestingly, the markets haven't really done a heck of a lot. They've been pretty flat for the last few weeks. And I think that shows you that, number one, you know, the equity markets, I don't think ever really bought that we were getting that week of growth. They've always been looking through the bad weather and looking for better days ahead. I guess you think the equity market's a little more optimistic. That's the history, and that's definitely what we saw this year. So even though growth's coming in a bit better now, you know, the equity market's probably discounted that somewhat. The fixed income market, on the other hand, is they're not taking any chances. They saw slowing growth in the first quarter. Interest rates dropped by about 30-plus basis points. They haven't really come back, and you know, maybe there's a bit of a geopolitical angle in there because we have all these problems in Eastern Ukraine and Russia. And the equity market, again, it's not a big concern for them. Not to say it's not a big deal in the world and on the geopolitical stage, it is. But the equity markets kind of look through it because they think, well, how much is it going to affect the earnings of a U.S. company or a Canadian company for that matter? Probably not very much unless they're directly exposed. Where the bond market tends to get this kind of so-called safety bid, if you will, when you have geopolitical events happening. And I think that's probably what's happening in the bond market. This Russia-Ukraine tension is holding interest rates a little lower than they would otherwise be. And we've also seen fairly weak inflation around the world. If you look at the inflation numbers in Canada, the U.S., and Europe, they've all been quite low. So maybe bond investors are looking at this and saying, well, interest rates aren't going up from the central banks for quite a long time. Inflation is very low, and inflation is what typically drives longer-term yields, so maybe they've emboldened themselves a little bit to take on longer-term interest rate risk. That said, when we look below the surface, we're starting to see the very early stages that inflation might be making a comeback. One of the things we watch is wage growth, or average hourly earnings growth, and this is in the U.S. Wage growth bottomed at about 1.3% back in late 2012, and now you've got wages growing at about a 2.2% pace. It doesn't sound like much, but through the typical cycle, it usually bottoms at around 1.5% and peaks out at around 4%. So you're kind of halfway there as far as the acceleration in wage growth goes. And this is usually a 3 to 4 year phenomenon. So again, this seems like it's actually hit an inflection point. And usually, once you see wage growth start to increase, that's when the Federal Reserve starts to increase interest rates. But as we all know, this cycle, they've kept interest rates very, very low. And they're not increasing them. They're only talking about dialing back the incredible stimulus they already have going on. So it's going to be a while yet until they raise interest rates, probably a year from now, maybe longer, depending on how inflation works out. But if this data is right, and some of the other unemployment statistics we see are right, there's a chance that inflation is going to increase sooner than they expect. And even though the central banks only look at core inflation, so they like to strip out food prices and energy prices. I guess they don't eat or drive at the central banks, but food prices are actually going up as well. Year over year, the food price index is up 7.5%. It's actually up 20% year to date, so which means you kind of had them drop into the end of last year, but they spiked year to date. So that's going to eventually feed through to headline inflation as well. Again, even though that doesn't really affect the thinking of the central bank, I think as investors it's something we have to look at. And all this has implications for the bond market and for all other asset classes for that matter. The ultra-low interest rates we've seen over the last 2 years have had an effect on every asset class. Naturally, on the bond market, because ultra-low short-term interest rates are going to affect the entire yield curve, but also affects everything else, right? You have to think of a dividend-paying stock, for example. If the 10-year treasury yields 1.5%, 2.5% on a blue-chip stock as a yield alternative looks pretty good. If the U.S. treasury yield goes to 4%, 2.5% on a good stock doesn't look so good on a yield comparison only. Obviously, there's many other things we look at when investing in equities, but we think a lot of money is flowing based on interest rates and what kind of yield people can get. So the interest rates in the bond market have an effect on everything, and the Federal Reserve has told us and the Bank of Canada that short-term rates are going to stay low for a while, but we're wondering what happens to the longer end of the yield curve. So there's kind of two bond markets. There's the short-term bonds, you know, 0 to 3 year bonds, which are affected mostly by the Federal Reserve or Bank of Canada interest rates that's set by the central bank. But if you go to 10-year bonds and 30-year bonds, those are more of market-driven rates affected by what people think is going to happen in economic growth and what people think is going to happen in inflation. So if inflation expectations start to increase, you're going to see long-term bond yields likely go higher. And if growth continues to accelerate and people start worrying about inflation, we think you could see that 10-year U.S. Treasury go back above 3%, which was the high last year. And if you all remember, the bond market last year wreaked a lot of havoc in certain corners of the equity market. We had interest rates in the 10-year sector nearly double from about 160 to 3%. And that had a big effect on a lot of the securities that have done so well in the post-crisis era, a lot of these higher-yielding, lower-growth companies that are tied to interest rates. And, you know, we've been lucky in that as interest rates have come down a little bit, a lot of these stocks have taken back a lot of those losses. Some of them are actually at new all-time highs. And we think we're in a really interesting position now where, you know, if people got scared about what happened to these things last year, you've got a good chance now to reevaluate your portfolio and see how it fits with the prospect of potentially seeing higher long-term interest rates again. Now, stepping back and looking at the equity market more broadly, we're always asking ourselves, where are we in the cycle? And there's a quote we love from Sir John Templeton that kind of looks at four stages of the equity market. The quote is, bull markets are born on pessimism, grow on skepticism, mature on optimism, and die on euphoria. So again, where would we be right now? Well, we definitely think we're past the pessimism stage. That was, you know, the spring of 2009. We think the skepticism stage probably ended in around 2011 into 2012. So we think we're now probably into the optimism stage, but nowhere near euphoria yet. You could have maybe accused the internet sector in the U.S. and the biotechs in the last 6 months of being in the euphoria stage, but that really seemed to have come to an end pretty quickly. And again, we think we're in that optimism phase because people are finally getting more comfortable with taking risk in the equity market. Valuations are still reasonable. And we think there's some room to go in the cycle yet. So if we look at what typically ends an economic cycle and ends a bull market, well, it's usually a recession. That's the kind of the surefire way to end a bull market is to give yourself a recession. And how do you get a recession? Well, usually you get strong economic growth and you get an inflation problem, right? You see some sort of excesses. They usually present themselves in an inflationary way. And at that point, the central banks don't want to see high inflation, so they start to step on the brakes a little bit harder. They start raising interest rates. Eventually, you get to the point where short-term interest rates are higher than long-term interest rates. So, for example, the short-term interest rate might be 4%, the long-term interest rate 3.75. They call that an inverted yield curve. And when that happens, it's usually just a waiting game until you get a recession. And where are we now? Well, let's see, the yield curve, the difference between the short-term and the long-term yield are near the highest it's ever been. And that alone suggests that a recession is some way off, even though we are seeing the Federal Reserve start to pull back a bit. Again, you have to remember, people talk about this tapering, if you will, of purchases of securities. So the Federal Reserve is now printing a little less money every month, buying less bonds. But that's just a very, very early step before they even think about raising interest rates, and even longer than that, until you get interest rates so high that you're going to have an inverted yield curve. So we think it's some way off. We still see the leading economic indicators are getting a little bit stronger. We think we're more kind of in the mid-cycle. If you see, again, when interest rates start to go higher, that's more of a mid-cycle phenomenon. We're finally seeing merger and acquisition activity start to come back. So we think there's still some legs in this cycle here. And, just to give you some data points, mergers and acquisitions, if the current pace keeps up, which is a pretty torrid pace, you'd be on a pace only eclipsed by what we saw back in 2007. So it's taken a long time for the merger and acquisition machine to spool back up, but it's definitely going full tilt right now. And if we had to look at one place where we are seeing any excesses, it's probably in the credit market. So things like high-yield bonds, you've seen the yields on these near their all-time lows. Companies are having a lot easier time getting credit. And the thing to know there, though, is that just because things are overvalued or a little frothy doesn't mean a crisis is imminent. These conditions can go on for months or even years. And the silver lining here is this is actually good for companies. This is allowing companies to borrow money to buy back stock, which is good for equity holders, or to pay out dividends. You saw Apple yesterday did another bond issue to finance their buyback. So we're at the part of the cycle now where companies spent years repairing their balance sheets by conserving cash, paying down debt. Well, now we're in the part of the cycle where equity holders are getting rewarded, and we think that's a positive for equity markets. And, we look at some of these riskier parts of the bond market. We're starting to take a closer look at them, but we don't think any crisis is imminent right now. So to sum it all up, we think that the economic cycle still has legs. We think there are risks in the bond market. If you get stronger growth, we think there's a risk that the 10-year interest rates go back to that 3% level, which could prove a bit of turbulence in the market, especially for securities with higher yields and not a lot of growth. So we think it's a great opportunity for people to reevaluate their portfolios here and position themselves for what we think is going to be a few more years of a good equity market.
Thank you, Robin. I think that concludes the formal remarks, and now we're going to open it up to questions. I'm not sure the process. I will start off the questions, and I have a few questions as it relates to your comments. Since last fall, 2013, we've seen a lot of volatility in our own currency, in the Canadian dollar, and I wondered if you could comment on the volatility, and how long do you think it's going to go on for?
Yeah, the Canadian dollar is a great question. I'm sure a question a lot of our listeners have. And the Canadian dollar, around this time last year was around parity. Now we're around 91 cents. We actually dipped below 90 cents. And we think that the volatility in the Canadian dollar, usually the Canadian dollar has been driven by commodity prices or by just general risk sentiment or equity markets and also short-term interest rates. So the view that the Bank of Canada is going to raise interest rates or the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates, who's going to do it first or faster? And that last one, the interest rates, has been the big determinant. Ever since the Bank of Canada, the new Bank of Canada governor, Mr. Pelaz, basically said we're not raising interest rates anytime soon, which was a big difference from Mr. Carney, who was saying we want to raise them, but we can't do it quite yet, the Canadian dollar took a big hit. And we also had our finance minister trying to talk down the currency at every chance they got, and they were fairly successful with it. So when we look at the Canadian dollar, we look at the Bank of Canada probably staying on hold for a while, the Federal Reserve inching closer to eventually raising interest rates, and it's really going to depend, I think, who goes first. I think the risk is, on the downside, the Canadian dollar is worth, on a fair value basis, around 85 to 86 cents. So So maybe over the medium to long term, you could hit that level. But in the short term here, we've had a nice bounce because the sentiment towards the Canadian dollar has increased. We had the whole world kind of hated the Canadian dollar a few months ago, and usually when you get that many people against something, it bounces back, and that's what we saw. And we think it still makes sense to diversify into U.S. dollars because you've got that natural hedge that when the world turns into a bad place, the U.S. dollar usually does pretty well versus the Canadian dollar, and you have a much wider amount of investment opportunities available to you in the different sectors. So things like the healthcare sector, technology, consumer that you don't have in Canada. So we still think even though the Canadian dollar has taken a bit of a hit here, it could go lower before it's all over, but either way, we still think the diversifying into U.S. dollars makes sense from a risk management perspective.
Thank you. You mentioned in your comments that you feel that longer term there's a risk in higher interest rates. Should investors be selling their dividend-paying stocks?
Well, I think one has to really differentiate between what the risks are of higher interest rates. If you own stocks that pay a dividend, that dividend is not going to change. The income you receive from it is not going to change just because interest rates go higher. So we think this is really an investor-specific discussion. So the short answer is no. Just because interest rates are going higher doesn't mean people should sell the dividend-paying stocks. But it does come down to, we think, is relative performance. So the stocks that have done well as interest rates have gone very low, again, stocks typically with high dividends and low growth, if interest rates move higher, those will probably underperform the market. It doesn't mean they're bad investments. It doesn't mean they're not going to give you the cash flow they've always given you. And it may be appropriate for some people who need higher cash flow. But we think as interest rates go higher, companies that are paying a growing dividend, so are growing their dividend at a decent clip every year, are one of the best ways you can insulate yourself. But I think it really comes down to client-specific decisions, what their income needs are, and what their risk tolerance is.
Okay, thank you. The final question I have is, when do you think the Bank of Canada will raise rates? There's a lot of speculation about this, and the Canadian economy seems to be percolating up. It certainly would be a boost to cash returns and returns on interest rates on short-term GICs.
Yeah, that's been one of the most difficult things for investors is just the absolute dearth of returns on cash. And unfortunately, it's probably not going to change anytime soon. The Bank of Canada is probably going to be on hold for another year, maybe a little bit more. And even then, the expectation from RBC is that they're going to raise interest rates fairly slowly. So unless your cash is required and you need it as an emergency requirement, you might be better off going out even from 1 year to a one-year GIC as opposed to cash or a two-year GIC if you can afford to lock your money up, because you do get a pretty significant incremental return and probably more than you'd get given the outlook for the bank. If they were to raise rates slowly, you're probably better off locking in for a year, maybe two. Again, it's something you can call us to discuss about in more detail. Everybody's situation is different, but the short answer is you're going to probably see low rates on cash for a while yet.
Thank you. I think that concludes the call. I'd like to thank everyone who's joined in on the call today for calling in. We appreciate your business. We post all our quarterly commentary on the Harbor Group website. And should you have any questions, please give us a call and we're happy to fill out more detail. I hope you found the call insightful and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.